Not bad at all. Sorry I was a little late for you.
Oh, no worries. So the first couple questions are really general. They're sort of about, like Peter said, how you approach a research project and a little bit about your level of computer skills. The first one is very specifically about computer skills. I mean, it's sort of hard to come up with a scale, but we say, how would you rate your computer skills on a scale of 1 to 5? And what we're trying to get at is sort of the degree to which you use all the functionality of the software that you use, your level of comfort, you know, exploring all the functionality of your software. Would you say you were a beginner, an intermediate, or an expert in that regard?
I would say probably somewhere in the 4 or 5 range. There's always more to learn.
Right.
In terms of just using straight up software interfaces, I'm pretty good with exploring that. I'm a little unusual in that because I'm the technology and IP counsel here.
Right.
I'm sort of a technology fetishist, so you know, I build boxes and I'm not like coding in C++ or anything, but I definitely, I use AutoCAD stuff and I do video editing on my computer and that sort of stuff, so I'm pretty comfortable with computers.
Great. Okay. Can you describe a little bit about your research methodology when you approach a new topic? Do you tend to go to the web first, or do you print publications that you go to first, or do you get on the phone and start calling your network of topical experts? Does it differ?
It's pretty contextual. As it relates to spectrum policy, because there's a pretty narrow subset of folks that are out there doing that, and there aren't that many great tools out there. Most of what I do is on the phone,
right.
So finding the right person that way. And so, you know, were you guys to design a tool that was both, I think one of the more valuable things you could do would not only be along the lines of, you know, who's got what spectrum and what markets and what does that mean to policy, but really just pointing people to a sort of human resource guide, you know, when press calls come about and they're wondering who handles, you know, X sort of spectrum policy, if they had a list of names to go to, that would be really useful, I think.
Okay. Well, a little bit more generally about your research methodology, just for a minute, and then we'll get more into this.
Sure. I mean, I use Google a lot. I use Nexus and Lexis a lot. I use...
Are there any particular sites or that you can think of where you've been really impressed by how well they've been able to, you know, organize and present information on a particular topic? Are there any, you know, government sites or advocacy groups or agencies out there doing?
I mean, there's sites that I'm forced to use that I don't happen to think the presentation of is brilliant, like the FCC's site is obviously a big one, but it's, you know, the search tools on the FCC site are abysmal.
Right.
And so I sort of use the Google toolbar to search a lot of sites.
As we all do.
Right.
And let's see, I mean, there's different tools in different spaces. There's, for instance, if you go to democrat.org, they've got some great grassroots advocacy tools. If you go to, you know, pbs.org, they've got some interesting presentations on media ownership and sort of graphical layouts of who owns what. I use Columbia Journalism Review's Media Finder a fair bit, which basically lists all the big media companies and all of their holdings. I use Edgar, freeedgar.com, which is not free anymore, unfortunately. I use that if I need to look up 8Ks, 10Ks, 10Qs, whatever kind of stock reports to dig into. I go to individual company websites to figure out holdings and stock shares and financials.
that sort of quantitative data, do you tend to like, you know, graphs and charts and visual aids, or do you prefer to read reports that sort of, you know, summarize the analysis in text?
I think some of both. You know, always, I'm a pretty visual person, so I think most of our generation is as well, so I think visual stuff is always very helpful, but some context to put flesh on the bones of the visuals is always helpful.
Okay. Well, do you feel like we've gotten enough sort of, I mean, thanks a lot for all those websites. We definitely will go check those out.
Yeah, no problem.
Do you feel like that's enough as far as general sort of?
Yeah, I think so.
The rest of the questions that we have are specifically about the spectrum and what you would like to see in a tool. And I know you've talked about that already, but...
Sure, I can drill down into, do you want to give me some questions first, or you want my general rant?
Well, one of the things that we need to get our heads around as far as our project is we need to understand what the goals of our users are. So it would be helpful for me, at least, to understand sort of, when you go looking for information about this, what are you trying to find out? Are you trying to make a case for a particular point of view? I'm sorry?
Am I trying to make a case for a particular advocacy end or et cetera?
Right.
I would say the 30,000 foot of what I need in this space, you know, there are one thing that would be particularly useful because it's not done elsewhere, even though the FCC should be doing it. What the level of actual competition in each, you know, MSA or BSA, BTAs, I forget what the units are, forgive me, but in the CMRS space, you know, what carriers are actually deployed in what markets. The reason I say this is because the FCC does something called the annual competition report, the annual CMRS competition report, and that report has tended to overstate the level of competition in a lot of markets, and understanding what real level of competition is very important, because when it comes down to a merger, for instance, knowing whether that merger is going to create an unacceptable level of concentration in a particular market, you need to know what people's market shares are.
Right.
To do, you know, Herfindahl-Hirschman indices and that sorts of stuff, different antitrust levels of concentration. Now, the reason I say it's goofy is because, for instance, when the FCC was looking to do its spectrum caps decision, it used to be that there was a 45 megahertz spectrum cap in markets. They've done away with that. And they did away with that spectrum cap on the basis of saying that there was, you know, what did they say? Wait, four carriers in every market, or whatever the conclusion they came to. The way that they did that was using people's allocated spectrum. And the reason this was goofy was because a company like NextWave, which had never signed up a single subscriber, because they had basically the same amount of spectrum as Verizon did, they were shown on parity with Verizon in most markets. You know, as in, like, they're saying, okay, there's this company NextWave out there, and because they've got 15 megahertz of spectrum or whatever, then their market share is the same as Verizon's. Well, you and I both know Verizon is doing a little better than that, and they've signed up some customers, and NextWave hasn't. So it would have been very useful to have an actual, you know, sense of not only who's got what spectrum, but what's their penetration, what's their deployment, how are they using that spectrum, you know, are they TDMA in this market, are they GSM, are they whatever. And so those kinds of facts are useful.
I haven't looked at the data closely enough to know whether the data would show that, but what they report is different. Do you think that the actual data shows that underestimates the amount of spectrum allocated to each of these life disease?
Yeah, I don't think it underestimates the amount of spectrum. I think that, although there are in some cases where there's like joint ventures between companies that on paper appear to be separate, I'm thinking of Alaska in this instance. I think Alaska Native Wireless is basically a subsidiary of Verizon. I think they've got heavy, Verizon has heavy duty stock ownership in Alaska Native Wireless.
Right, so they're able to gain access to other companies' allocations without having to officially report it.
Yeah,
right.
There's that. Although now that the spectrum cap has been lifted, it's less relevant because they could just buy them anyway. But let's maybe step out beyond the CMRS space. I mean, I assume you guys are looking to do spectrum broadly, right?
Yeah, I wonder, though, how we could get our heads around that, how we could capture those discrepancies.
Good luck.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
So there's no FCC requirements for sort of publishing what their deployment levels are. So, for instance, NextWave doesn't have to give the FCC a, this is Peter, by the way.
Yeah, sure.
NextWave doesn't have to give the FCC a report that says we have, you know, deployed equipment in these specific areas on a yearly, quarterly, whatever basis.
Boy, I really can't answer that question. I can't answer what they give the FCC or my hunch is that the FCC has pretty good data in this space. I don't know what they can publicly report. A lot of those data are proprietary, so, you know, their penetration levels in certain markets may be sort of...
competitive information?
Yeah, and I don't think they'd want to be making that public, so there's that. I mean, I assume you guys are looking to, you know, do sort of research more than you would be a collaboration with somebody like deadzones.com. I don't know if you know Deadzones.
No, but we'll check it out. Actually, you know what? I do know that site. I did go there a couple times.
So that guy, Jeff, I forget what Jeff's last name is. Anyway, he started this a couple years back just, you know, as a way for people to input where there are problems in their cell coverage and received pretty overwhelming response. He's now eyeing trying to sell that data to the carriers, but I think he's going to need another strategy, and I don't know really what the ultimate repository of that info that he's collected is and how it makes sense. I mean, it's a little problematic from a science perspective because it's not verified, right? So if somebody comes in and says, hey, at Olson D, Southwest, Washington, D.C., there's a dead zone, and nobody goes out and checks and, you know, brings out their spectrum analyzer to see if there really is a dead zone there or if, you know, that was just a multipath problem they were having at that second. So, you know, I can't sort of enthusiastically endorse them, but it's worth taking a look at what they've done and what they've done graphically. Another place that you guys could have value, and again, this is all in the CMRS space, and let's step out of that in a second, but just because that's the hardcore consumer issue and that's what we're doing here, I'll start there. There, the requirement that companies provide coverage maps is now gone, and so certain companies are eyeing the possibility that they're just going to eliminate providing coverage maps to their subscribers.
Oh, my God.
That seems a little anti-consumer.
Well, I don't know how anyone would choose to buy one service or another if they don't have any sense for how well they provide coverage.
Well, I'm with you on that one. And it's just amazing that the way the FCC has dealt with the discrepancy in, there was some class action suits in 98, 99, maybe even 97, against Sprint, I think, in particular, where they said, you know, look, you've got these coverage maps, they're totally inaccurate, you're billing your services available to subscribers in places where it's not, and so they've got a pretty substantial class action judgment against them. And so the FCC, hearing that, oh, you know, there's problems with coverage maps, the way they dealt, and also gas carriers are not required to provide coverage maps. Or wait, maybe it's the other way around. Maybe PCS carriers are required or were required, and the other half of the market was not. And so the FCC, instead of ratcheting up requirement on the other set of carriers, said, well, the logical way to do this is just to cut the requirement. Because, you know, they'll, it's in companies' interest to provide these data to subscribers, so they'll probably do it. We thought that was a pretty atrocious decision, and it's going to leave, I think, a big information gap now that the larger carriers have basically said, look, these maps are too costly for us to produce, and so we're just going to stop doing them. Now, I don't see how you guys can do that either.
I'm not exactly sure how we would get our hands on that.
Yeah, I mean, I do know how you would do it. Like, if you were a commercial group, you'd go to somebody called Telefia.
Telefia?
You know Telefia? They do drive data for the cell carriers.
I think I saw them at a couple wireless conferences a couple years back.
Yeah, you might want to take a look at what they do. They've got some pretty amazing information products out there. I mean, they... you know, in the Sprint commercial where the guy's driving around saying, can you hear me now, can you hear me now, can you hear me now, they essentially do that for real with Spectrum Analyzer. They will pick a highway route which covers 95% or 90% of a basic trading area and then drive that route and plot the strength of signal along that route, and then they sell that those data to the cell phone carriers to let them know where the gaps in their networks are. So, I mean, that's where you go to get the data, but it'll cost you millions upon millions of dollars.
Okay, well, okay, so let's back up and think about what we could do with the FCC data that, you know, is currently at our disposal. What sort of pleasant, or what sort of analysis on that data can we provide that would help people in your field sort of, you know, put together arguments and proposals and, you know, affect the change that you want to affect? Is there anything in that data that's going to be useful if we could get at it? Regional analysis? I don't know.
I mean, I'm coming at this from the perspective of the magazine. You know, so Consumer Reports, we look at, a lot of subscriber complaints. The way we've done this has been primarily through survey data. Mm-hmm. However, the FCC also receives complaints from individual subscribers, and they don't—they used to report the aggregate totals of complaints and the kinds of complaints they were getting. They're not doing that anymore. And I just heard that I think AARP successfully negotiated that those data out of the commission, and so you might be able to talk to somebody over there and get those data. And so, I mean, that kind of aggregate complaint reporting is useful. I realize this is not what you guys are shooting at, and I'm trying to...
Well, we really want to find out from you all what would be useful. I mean, we're not married to anything at
yeah.
this point, but we do have some limitations on what sort of data we can access.
Sure. Well, so... from the abstract level, what interests me most is data about competition, data about quality of service, mm-hmm. data about density in markets, you know, like where are the carriers running up against a limit on the number of subscribers they've got on the network, you know, like information that would marry the number of subscribers on a system with the number of antennas in an area mm-hmm. that would give you a sense of, you know, how dense is their subscribership and how soon will they be up against
the wall.
Critical limits on, you know, needing to deploy more equipment, exactly. I don't know how you would get that,
but again, I'm just sort of abstracting to what's useful for me.
The FCC have a, I think there's a database when they, whenever they do a deployment, whenever they put up a tower or anything.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I know I've seen it, a company called MDS America had taken, I don't know if they'd taken that database, but they basically used a huge GPS database. And so they were using sort of satellite imaging with an overlay of where the network is to develop mathematical models of where signal strength would be. And they were doing this more for internal purposes. This wasn't like a marketing tool.
They were going to be MDS. I assume there's some sort of fixed wireless kind of company or something like that?
Yeah, they were trying to be in the space where North Point Broadwave was, which was they were asking to reuse
the
satellite spectrum.
Right.
This isn't actually the MMDS spectrum.
Okay.
This is, where is it, 12.3 or something like that. And it, they were asking to, in the space where satellite is, you know, EchoStar and DirecTV are beaming their signals down to subscribers. Those birds are, you know, in the southerly sky,
right.
And what they were saying is, hey, let us put up some fixed wireless towers and have subscribers turn their dishes to the north, and we'll offer them, you know, 60 to 90 channels for $20 a month, plus broadband for $20 a month.
Right, I read about that. There's a whole group, a Texas group, I think, that was trying to pursue broadband at basically just a different angle of
frequency. Yeah, exactly.
Over the same frequency.
Yeah.
They were not very happy about it, if I remember the EchoStar folks.
Yeah, they were giving us a lot of grief on that front, but what can you do? So, you know, I'm just trying to think what you guys can do.
Well, I think that you've given us some good.
Well, the idea of looking to see if we can, we might be able to do some aggregating, you know, just number of towers in a geographic area and in a specific spectrum kind of picture, you know, where we show, you know, say Sprint owns, you know, this piece of the spectrum, and they've got 10 towers in this kind of geographic area, kind of thing. That might be able. We have to look at whether how much, you know, data on the towers we can get. But
give me the sort of mandate of your project. What's the objective of what you guys are doing? Less abstract, above the level of what you think you're going to do right now, and tell me what you were given to kick this off.
Well, we were given to kick this off basically an understanding, you know, a picture of the frequency allocation chart, and an understanding, you know, that the Department of Commerce sort of goal for this chart was to provide a tool that kind of that wide and diverse audiences would find useful in gaining a special or general understanding of the U.S. domestic spectrum allocation policies. That's what Marty kind of threw us at it with and said, you know, can we make a tool that is more understandable than the, you know, than the wall chart. And then, you know, in talking with Jim, you know, he kind of said, well, you know, the wall chart is one thing, but nobody provides, you know, the wall chart for local areas. So then we kind of added on to that, maybe, you know, that we could do the wall chart and compare the wall chart to local you know, to local wireless licenses, so that you would be able to, you know, type in Houston and see what the, you know, what the ownership looked like for, you know, a specific band of spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to lay, and then potentially layer on, you know, what the, you know, census number was for that geographic region too. You know, that so that you can get sort of an idea of what the audience is.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, he was saying that there's no real tools out there to do on-the-fly spectrum chart creation, so that you could look at a specific area and have the chart for that area and who owns it, you know, who are the players in the spectrum band in a specific geographic area. So, you know, it seems like it would be kind of useful to be able to, you know, say, you know, hit, you know, Washington, D.C. and know who owns what part of the spectrum. The problem, of course, is from talking to some other folks is that, you know, it's not so cut and dry.
And the data's not that good,
yeah,
as you were saying.
It's not that cut and dry that, you know, somebody owns the spectrum. You know, maybe they, you know, there's this sort of Swiss cheese idea of spectrum where somebody owns a little piece of it here and somebody owns a little piece of it there, and it kind of gets confusing.
And there's the whole other issue of whether it's actually being used efficiently.
Sure.
Right. And we're not exactly sure how we could provide any insight into that issue either. So we're definitely, it's a huge topic, and we're trying to narrow it down to something that we can provide that would be useful.
The problem is that it's such an unthinkably huge undertaking identified that, and the subset of people that would use it, you know, like, it's not immediately obvious to me where it's going to be useful for, you know, somebody to know who's got what spectrum in Houston. I mean, I can get it. I'm just trying to figure out how it could be most useful and doable at the same time.
Well, I think that's kind of that aspect is doable, and to some extent useful. I mean, it's not easily, and then portraying it in sort of a visual context is kind of the goal, so that, you know, it's not, you know, doing a search of the FCC database and looking for all FCC area, so that it's divided up a little bit more intelligently rather than just kind of spinning stuff out of a database.
Sure.
Maybe we should try to. Are we down towards the end of our questions?
We've certainly gone a lot more deeply into the specific subject matter than these questions would have taken it.
Fair enough.
I think it's a little bit daunting, but I mean, I think there's something we could do as far as competition, quality of service, and density, but we probably need to, you know, go back to Jim and ask for other data sources and investigate some of these ones that you suggested. I'm not 100% sure we're going to be able to put together something that's, you know, production quality that's going to